This is an audio summary for your AIL 80102 course. The reading is Prediction Machines, Chapter 21, Beyond Business, by Ajay Agrawal, Joshua Ganz, and Avi Goldfarb. Elon Musk has built a side career out of sounding alarms about artificial intelligence, warning that people should be deeply concerned, and that he keeps ringing the bell until robots are literally walking down the street causing harm. Daniel Kahneman, the Nobel laureate behind Thinking, Fast and Slow, comes at it from the opposite direction, but lands somewhere just as unsettling. At a 2017 conference in Toronto on the economics of AI, Kahneman argued machines will eventually be wiser than we are, because they reason statistically, resist seductive stories, and have what he called broad framing, the ability to avoid getting trapped in narrow thinking. Wisdom, he said, is breadth. And humans are narrow, noisy thinkers who are easy to improve upon. Musk and Kahneman disagree about almost everything except this. AI's potential is enormous, and unleashing it on society raises questions no single business can answer. Those questions have prompted some striking responses. Bill Gates floated taxing the robots that replace workers. Y Combinator ran experiments with universal basic income. Musk helped found OpenAI with a $1 billion commitment so that no single company could monopolize the technology. The moment you move from one firm's profit and loss statement to the welfare of a whole society, the problem changes shape. So, is this the end of jobs? Stephen Hawking worried that automation had already gutted manufacturing, and that AI would push that destruction up into the middle class, leaving only the most caring, creative, or supervisory roles. It is an old fear. Ever since the Luddites smashed textile frames 2 centuries ago, the specter of technological unemployment has hovered over every major innovation, and yet unemployment has stayed remarkably low. Farm jobs vanished over a century ago without producing permanent mass joblessness. The counter-worry, though, is that this time might be different. In past disruptions, humans retreated to tasks machines could not do. Horses lost their jobs to engines and never came back because they could not compete on anything else. The fear is that AI finally comes for the last human refuge, brainpower itself. Economists like to test this with a thought experiment. Imagine an island called Robotlandia suddenly appears off the coast, populated entirely by robots and prediction machines. Would you trade with it? From a free trade standpoint, of course, the robots would handle a vast range of tasks and free your people to do what they do best. Trading with Robotlandia is no different from trading with any foreign country, so if you favor free trade between nations, logically you favor developing AI even when it displaces some jobs. Decades of trade research show that some jobs disappear while others emerge, and total employment does not collapse. Where do the new jobs come from? From the anatomy of decision-making itself. As prediction gets cheap, the bottleneck moves. The value is no longer in the prediction. It is in the judgment, the data, and the action around it, and those are where humans still matter. We should expect growth in work like reward function engineering, deciding what an AI should actually optimize for. The ride-sharing story shows the pattern. London's black cab drivers were highly paid specialists whose edge was knowing every street and shortcut. Then prediction machines made route optimization nearly free, and suddenly anyone's phone could navigate the city. The specialized cabbie job shrank, but the total number of people driving for hire grew through Uber and Lyft, jobs that are less prestigious, less specialized, and lower paid. Expect the same in medicine, finance, and law. More jobs centered on widely distributed judgment skills, but possibly at lower wages. AI also has one feature human workers lack: software scales. Once an AI beats people at a task, displacement can happen fast. We may be confident new jobs arrive within a few years, but that is cold comfort to someone who needs work next month, and an AI-induced recession is possible even if the long-run picture is stable. Then there is income. Opening trade brings competition, and competition pushes prices down. When machines compete for tasks, the human wage for those tasks falls, and if those tasks are your livelihood, your income drops. There are winners and losers, just as with trade between countries. The deeper worry is distribution. AI can automate high-skill, high-paid cognitive work, so jobs may survive without their paychecks. Jason Furman, who chaired President Obama's Council of Economic Advisors, put it sharply. His fear was not that AI would be different from past technology, but that it would be the same as the last few decades, decades in which Thomas Piketty documented labor's shrinking share of national income and capital's rising one, alongside widening inequality. If AI is simply a new and efficient form of capital, that trend likely continues. There is no clean fix. Gates's robot tax would trim inequality, but also make investing in robots less attractive, slowing the very productivity gains we want. A second engine of inequality is skill bias. New technologies tend to reward the highly educated and bypass everyone else. Computers and the internet, both skill-biased, explain much of the wage inequality in the United States and Europe over the last 40 years, and as economists Claudia Golden and Lawrence Katz observe, people with more education and ability grasp complicated new tools faster. AI is unlikely to break that rule. AI skills are scarce right now, so the best talent commands a premium, and reskilling at scale is hard. Andrew Ng's online machine learning course had reached over 4 million students by 2022, still a sliver of the global workforce. Our education system was never built for continuous mid-career retraining, and the workers hurt most by skill-biased technology are often the least able to go back to school. Will a handful of giant companies end up controlling everything? Firms are terrified of falling behind because of scale economies in data. More customers generate more data sharpens predictions, better predictions attract more customers, and the loop reinforces itself until a leader looks untouchable. We have been here before, though. A AT&T-dominated telecom for half a century, Microsoft and Intel near-monopolized computing, Google owned search, Facebook owned social. Yet challengers kept arriving. Joseph Schumpeter called this the gale of creative destruction, and technology monopolies tend to be temporary. AI enjoys scale economies, but that does not guarantee a single eternal winner. Interestingly, when economists Leslie Kew and Catherine Tucker exploited a natural experiment in search data retention, they found scale mattered surprisingly little for common searches. The catch is the long tail. Roughly a fifth of daily Google searches are unique, and on those rare queries, a data edge can compound into market share. That uncertainty is exactly why Apple, Google, Microsoft, Facebook, Baidu, Tencent, Alibaba, and Amazon are all spending furiously, racing each other and the startups that do not yet exist, and why the policy question of when concentration becomes excessive has no easy answer. Will some countries pull ahead? In 2017, Vladimir Putin declared that whoever leads in AI will rule the world. Countries can shape regulation and direct spending to favor their firms. Historically, the United States led both research and commercialization, with the late Obama administration publishing report after report and nearly every federal agency gearing up. But the trend lines are shifting toward China. Two Chinese firms, Tencent and Alibaba, rank among the world's most valuable companies, and China's share of papers at the largest AI research conference jumped from 10% in 2012 to 23% in 2017, while the United States share slipped. Why might China lead? First, investment, with the government pouring billions into startups, megaprojects, and basic research. One city alone committing more than all of Canada and Tianjin, announcing a $5 billion AI fund. And this investment is not zero sum. As economist Scott Stern once told a worried congressman, the first thing America should do is send thank you letters to countries that increase research spending, because innovation is a race we can all win. Second, scale in data. Since China has more people, more factories, more smartphone users, and more patients to train systems on. As Kai-Fu Lee put it, North America has the best researchers, but China has plenty of good ones and far more data, and AI evolves the algorithm and the data together. Third, data access, because China's approach to privacy differs sharply from Western democracies, with vast centralized image databases enabling facial recognition firms like Face++ to power ride-hailing, mobile payments, and rail ticketing. Europe's stricter privacy rules could shut its firms out, and there is a real danger of a race to the bottom on privacy, except that citizens value privacy too, and people tend to want better AI trained on everyone's data but their own. Finally, the big one is AI an existential threat. Serious people worry about a superintelligence that sees humanity as an obstacle. The authors cannot settle the question, but they note the debate is fundamentally economic, all about competition. A superintelligence that wanted to control the world would still need resources, and even it must obey physics, so acquiring resources is costly. Nick Bostrom's famous thought experiment imagines an AI so obsessed with making paper clips that it consumes everything else, but that picture overlooks competition. Different agents have different preferences, and as long as interests compete, a paperclip AI would usually find it more profitable to trade for resources than to fight for them, led as if by an invisible hand to outcomes far from its original intent. Economists who have spent decades modeling hyper-rational agents are oddly well prepared for this. The crucial qualification is that the AI in this book is not general intelligence, it is narrow prediction. AlphaGo Zero taught itself to crush the world's best Go players with no human input, which spooked a lot of people, but enlarged the board from 19 by 19 to 29 by 29, and it flounders where a human adapts, and it cannot make a grilled cheese sandwich. The U.S. National Science and Technology Council concluded that general AI is likely decades away and should have little bearing on current policy, even as firms like Vicarious, DeepMind, Kindred, and Numenta raise serious money trying to build it. So is this the end of the world as we know it? Not yet, but it may be the end of the merely narrow prediction machines this book describes, because companies are deploying them right now where predictions shape decisions that matter. And the simple economics of cheaper prediction and more valuable judgment will keep driving innovation for years to come.